Gettysburg Seminary presents the Seminary Explores podcast. Conversations on faith, art, people, politics, theology, life, and more. With voices from around the corner and around the globe.
The Cost of War, Part 3, The Lessons of Yugoslavia from the 1990s. Hello, I'm Jerry Christensen, and this is the Seminary Explores. James Roach is the former Chief of Interpretation and Visitor Services at the Gettysburg National Military Park, and at the end of his career with the Park Service, he was the site manager at the Eisenhower National Historical Site, and he has spent a good deal of time traveling in and thinking about Yugoslavia, and so we want to ask him today about his experiences there. There was this terrible war in Yugoslavia. When did it take place?
From 1991, and I guess you could run it all the way to 1999.
Which was brought to a close by an agreement between the United States and the warring parties called the Dayton Accords.
The Dayton Accords.
We all, the nations of the world, finally got in and said, this has got to be put to a stop. Different kind of a war, wasn't it, in some ways? But before I jump to that conclusion, let's talk a little bit about background. What do we need to know about the situation in the former Yugoslavia?
Well, it goes back to pre-World War I, when there was Serbia, and it was a totally separate country. The areas now of Croatia, Slovenia, and Bosnia-Herzegovina were all part of the Austria-Hungarian Empire. And it just so happened that the Archduke of the empire was visiting Sarajevo, essentially showing the flag and reviewing the troops. And there was a lot of Serbians in that area who really wanted their own independence. And there was a man who, along with some others, had an opportunity to kill the Archduke and his wife. And then we had World War One, and the rest is history, as they say.
As they say. In between time, during and after the Second World War, a figure arose, charismatic figure, who was able to reunite, and in fact then the name Yugo means New Slavia or something, doesn't it?
Southern Slavs.
Means Southern Slavs.
Yes.
Okay, but it was a united nation. Under the leadership of
Marshal Tito. Tito was born north of Zagreb in Croatia. His mother was Slovenian, and he married a Serbian,
which
makes him a true Yugoslav.
Maybe the only Yugoslav that ever lived.
Right.
And for various reasons, mainly his charisma and also a very strong control. Ostensibly a communist, but not in great favor with Russia.
His own brand of communism.
Yeah.
People were relatively free. They were free to travel. There was a lot of capitalism in his Yugoslavia. So it was a very, very different kind of communism.
Yeah.
But it was, I guess, almost more socialist.
The word was probably socialism rather than true communism. When Tito died, that kind of control, whatever it was, good or bad, came to an end. And I always think of the irony that the apex of the Yugoslavia days was the Olympics in Sarajevo, which, when they ended, in a sense, the fighting almost broke out right there, and it's often centered right in Sarajevo.
Oh, yes. There were several pieces to it's a very complicated history.
Oh.
And unfortunately, it all did not occur at the same time. The breakup started in 91, about 10 years after Tito's death. And it really started because of political personalities who wanted more territory. They wanted, more. The Serbs wanted more property. And we had a whole mix of different ethnic groups living in the Balkans. The only area which had almost entirely one ethnic group was Slovenia. and
which is to the far north and adjacent to Austria,
right
in the hills as well. So
yes,
it was kind of isolated.
Yes, it had very steep valleys, and which is interesting because Slovenia was like the first country to break apart and declare its independence.
Mm-hmm.
There were five countries that formed the Confederation of Yugoslavia.
Mm-hmm.
Slovenia, Croatia, Bosnia-Herzegovina, Serbia, Macedonia, mm-hmm. and Montenegro, Kosovo, and Vojvodina.
Yes, that other one.
which capital is Novi Sad, were a part of Serbia. They were also semi-independent, but Serbia controlled their votes.
So, in short, one of our conclusions is that one of the causes of war here was, for better or for worse again, out of this one nation, which was created, in a sense, out of agreements of the First World War, has come, in our time, seven.
That's right.
Different separate nations.
Yeah.
The only one that probably did so peacefully was Slovenia.
Not totally. There
okay.
was a 10-day war with Slovenia.
Even Slovenia. Had to go through their 10 days.
Well, the Yugoslav army supposedly was neutral.
Mm-hmm.
However, 70% of the officer corps of the Yugoslav army were Serbian.
Yeah.
So they were anything but.
Oh, yeah.
So as soon as things started to heat up, those officers who were not Serbian
mm-hmm.
went home
yeah.
to look after their own
people, yeah.
Yeah, interests.
Meanwhile, you've got an army that's been transformed into a Serbian army without. I want to switch from this background to this political background to the religious background. That too is complicated.
It is, and we have these ethnic groups that are living all over the Balkans. And they represent three different major religions: Roman Catholic, Christian Orthodox, and Muslim.
And you don't want to ask me about that because in this case, because as a medieval historian, I can go on for at least our interview to tell you about how actually it wasn't just the First World War that split them up. They've been this way since they were Christianized. The one group coming out of Constantinople representing the East and therefore Orthodoxy and the Greek language. And when that started to happen, the Pope in Rome said, hey, we better get part of this party, and so sent missionaries from Rome. And it's been competitive ever since.
Very.
Without necessarily casting aspersions either on the Greek Orthodox origins, on Constantinople or on Rome, there has been deep-seated distrust even before this war started out.
Oh, yeah. Probably the only place that really had a harmonious population of every ethnic group was Sarajevo before mm-hmm. before all this conflict.
Mm-hmm.
There were, you know, an awful lot there were a lot of mixed marriages.
Oh, yeah.
After the conflict, the United States received a lot of refugees.
Who couldn't live anywhere.
Right, because they couldn't live
welcome anywhere.
They couldn't live at home because neither family now could welcome
one of the members of the family.
Right.
We talked about the two major religions. There's a third one there, the Muslims. How did we get Muslims in what we think of as Europe? We should have a map here, Jim. I wish we had these maps that you've laid out before me. If this were television, we could see more easily, but perhaps you can describe the situation.
Well, the Ottoman Turks conquered this part of the world, and they were on the gates of Vienna.
Just at the time of the Reformation Renaissance.
Right. And the Serbs, the Orthodox Christians, mm-hmm. A little over 600 years ago now, were defeated at the Battle of the Blackbirds in Kosovo. And they've never forgotten.
That's contemporary history.
Right. It could have been yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
So there's always been this underlying current of, us against them. But having been to this part of the world a couple of times and seen the people, and Sarajevo is a wonderful place to see everybody, you're looking at someone, and mm-hmm. and you don't have a clue
as to what they are until they
religion they are.
Yeah. I was struck by the fact that when I learned from your previous presentations on this, my understanding was that the Muslims were Turks left over from the Ottoman Empire, and you said not at all.
Well,
might be some, but
I'm sure there are some.
Yeah,
but they went in and they made it difficult if you were not a Muslim.
Mm-hmm.
You had to pay extra taxes and mm-hmm. and do other things. You could still be a Christian. It's just that you were not a first class citizen.
Yeah. And so people converted.
Right.
So these are converts to Islam.
Yes, it was easier to convert than
Slavs.
Have a better life than to be a second class.
Yeah. So the complexities go on and on. We're talking about Yugoslavia as part of our series on the cost of war, and our guest is Jim Roach, who at the end of his career was the site manager of the Eisenhower National Historical Site. I'm Jerry Christensen. Glad you could be in on our conversation today. To personalize all this, let's spend the second half of our program, Jim, with the people you met in your travels and the situations where you found them, and also what their reflections told you about Yugoslavia.
Our first visit to the area was in 2005. We were taking a boat cruise from Budapest to the Black Sea on the Danube River. And one late afternoon, we docked in a town called Vukovar in Croatia and noticed some damaged buildings and a water tower. And the next day, we had a tour. And we rounded the corner in the bus, and it was, oh, my goodness gracious, I completely forgot about the war, and that was recent, barely 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And a great deal of the town, even in 2005,
had been destroyed.
Yes, had been destroyed, and they were still just beginning to rebuild.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a home-hosted lunch in a village halfway between Vukovar and Osijek, which is the capital of Slavonia, mm-hmm. which is the province of Croatia, not to be confused with
Slovenia
yeah. or Slovakia.
Well, okay.
But it is Slavonia is the flat part of Croatia.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, the lady of the house, her house had been completely destroyed and had, she had recently been rebuilt, and she'd moved back, and through a translator, she told us just how bad it was when the Serb army, actually the Yugoslav army, the JNA, mm-hmm. came marching through. At that time, they were essentially on their way to Zagreb,
mm-hmm.
but they stopped well before they ever got to Zagreb.
My impression was that this was not a war between armies and battles, pitched battles, as much as it was to frighten people out of their homes, drive them away.
Right.
Kind of somewhere between a land grab and ethnic cleansing. I haven't got the words to describe this conflict. I don't know if I've ever seen or heard of the same.
Well, I would say ethnic cleansing.
Certainly you think it was that.
Yes. Going north from Sarajevo into Croatia, which is mostly Serbian. There are parts of Bosnia-Herzegovina, mm-hmm. which are mostly Christian, mm-hmm. Croatian, mostly Muslim,
mm-hmm.
or mostly Serbian today.
Yeah.
Before the war, all these areas were mixed. There may have been a preponderance of one and a minority of another, but now they are pretty much one.
Okay.
And driving north, it was like every other house is vacant and nature is reclaiming it,
mm-hmm.
because these were Christians with a Croatian background who were forced to leave.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is in Bosnia-Herzegovina. Now, at the end of the conflict, the Serbs had captured a good part of what was a Serbian area of Croatia. About a third of Croatia was in Serbian hands. But the Croatian army staged a massive, almost a blitzkrieg, uh-huh. and recaptured this former territory.
Right.
So I'm sure that you'd find that the former Serbian part mm-hmm. of Croatia now also has vacant property.
Because they drove the Serbians out, or at least they fled.
Yeah, 4 million people became displaced.
Of all backgrounds.
Right.
Not just Serbs, not just Croatians, not just Muslims. The 4 million. Where did most of them go? Some settled in the United States.
Well, yeah, those with mixed backgrounds certainly did. However, if you were Croatian, you moved to Croatia.
Mm-hmm. So they did resettle, and the Serbians went to Serbia and had to find a new life, probably in much more straitened circumstances than they had before, struggling to make a living and rebuild their lives. You also went to Sarajevo and included some visits to families there.
We had a home-hosted dinner with a family in a high-rise apartment building built during, you know, the Tito era. Mm-hmm. And it was about a block off of Marshal Tito Boulevard, which at the time was known as Sniper Alley. Mm-hmm. And they lived on the 8th floor. And the siege lasted
months.
Months and months. 42 months.
42 months.
And they did not have electricity.
On the 8th floor?
On the 8th floor. And they had to carry water up those steps and their groceries and all their waste back
down. The sewage went downstairs and the water went upstairs and the groceries 8 floors.
Yeah. And also try to maintain a life as normal as they could because there were children and they went to school. So you're doing all these things as normal, trying to avoid being shot.
Stay away from the windows, go out the back door. You're in a war, in the middle of a war zone.
Incredible. And the buildings there still have a lot of war mm-hmm. damage.
Yeah. They're pockmarked everywhere, everywhere you see them. You also went to Mostar, which is, I think, even today, or even how it was, famous for its mosque. That's a kind of a Muslim center.
And its arched bridge.
Oh, that's right, yes.
The famous bridge. The bridge was commanded to be built by Suleiman the Magnificent. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're going back centuries. This was a beautiful arched span. It was in United Nations World Heritage Site. But it was destroyed.
Right away, yes. That was where the first thing was blown up.
And one of the interesting things about it has been rebuilt and using as much of the original material as they could. And the mosques have been all rebuilt. And the Franciscan Catholic Church has been rebuilt. And mm-hmm. The interesting thing is that this Franciscan Catholic Church has the tallest bell tower I have ever seen in my life.
Taller than any mosque, any minaret at a mosque.
That's right. So
if you build it high, we can build it higher.
Yes. It's interesting that, here we have a Franciscan Catholic
dedicated
church
to the humility of their founder, Francis. We shouldn't laugh about all this because it has one tragic story after another. What did you have the feeling about the people you met? What memory and forgetting? The memory is still
the memory,
strong element in this.
The memory
this war.
Is as fresh as if the war ended yesterday. And probably the tragic thing is people have lost trust in their neighbors.
Yeah.
If their neighbor is not like me, I don't trust them.
Yeah. And they don't wear a different kind of uniform. They don't wear a different kind of hat. The ethnicity here is not obvious, or the religion even. Not that that helps any in as far as interpersonal relations, but you don't know until you finally identify a person if that person is to be trusted or not.
Yeah. The people living there would say, oh, I know. I can tell. I don't know whether they
what
really
the criteria really are.
Whether they really know or not.
They watch to see if they want the mosque.
Maybe somebody's wearing a secret lapel pin or something.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah.
But everybody looked like they could all be cousins.
I don't believe that I intend to be a pessimist, but if this has lasted 600 years since the Battle of the Black Blackbirds, Black Crows.
Battle of the Blackbirds, yes.
And beyond that, to the, or since then, the occupation of Muslim Turks, of Serbians, of Croatians, and so on, it's not likely that this is going to be something that's overcome immediately.
I don't think so.
But what ways do you think we can hope for some remediation? People living together again for a while in service to one another?
Yes. And they share an awful lot of common history and even common traditions. There are dances called circle dances that are performed all over the area.
Including the airports.
Well, including where we caught our bus in Mostar. We got off our bus and there was a group of elderly Bosnian-Herzegovinians, and they could have been the AARP of Bosnia there. And the gentleman had an accordion, and the lady had a tambourine, and they were entertaining themselves as well as entertaining us with song, music, and dancing. Mm-hmm. And we have no idea whether they were Orthodox, Muslim,
or
Christian,
Catholics.
Everybody was. We had a good time and joined in their dance. And
it's easy to say this, Jim, but you'd like people to remember what they have in common and celebrate what their differences.
Yes,
but that's an ideal world that you and I can probably best hope for. Jim Roach, our guest today, the former site manager of the Eisenhower National Historic Park. And also a former chief of interpretation and visitor services for the Gettysburg National Military Park, talking about the cost of war, the lessons of Yugoslavia. For the Seminary Explorers, I'm Jerry Christensen. Have a very good day.
You have been listening to The Seminary Explorers from historic Seminary Ridge in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, a production of Gettysburg Seminary. We invite you to visit our website at www.ltsg.edu. Opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of Gettysburg Seminary or the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.